Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Bringing you the latest research, tools, and common sense tips you need to get and stay healthy. It's Talk Healthy Today. Here's Dr. Jeffrey Burke.
Here's a not-so-sweet statistic for you. According to the American Diabetes Association, nearly 30 million people in the United States have diabetes, and another 86 million suffer with prediabetes, a condition where blood sugar levels are higher than normal. Could diabetes or prediabetes be in your future? Well, it's been estimated that half of all Americans will develop one of these two conditions by the year 2020. So what's behind this looming health epidemic? Today I'll be speaking with Johnny Bowden, a.k.a. the Nutrition Mythbuster, about the causes and effects of high blood sugar levels on America's health and waistline. A little background of my amazing guest, Johnny Bowden. Also, like I mentioned, the Nutrition Mythbuster is a nationally known board-certified nutritionist and expert on diet and weight loss. He's appeared on The Dr. Oz Show, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, ABC, NBC, and CBS as an expert on nutrition and has contributed to articles in The New York Times, Forbes, The Daily Beast, The Huntington Post, Vanity Fair Online, Men's Health, Prevention, and dozens of other print and online publications. Dr. Johnny is the best-selling author of 15 books, including The 150 Healthiest Foods on Earth, Living Low Carb, now in its fourth edition, and is the co-author with cardiologist Stephen Sinatra, one of the controversial bestsellers, The Great Cholesterol Myth, While Lowering Your Cholesterol Won't Prevent Heart Disease, and The Statin-Free Plan That Will. His latest book, Smart Fat, Eat More Fat, Lose More Weight, Get Healthy Now, written with PBS star Stephen Masley, MD, was published by HarperCollins in January of 2016. Johnny, it's a great topic to talk about today with diabetes looming over our heads all the time. You know, one thing we have to remember is although a lot of people will say that we are predestined to have this and we have genetic predispositions, which is true in many instances, but I think it's our fork, our knife, and our lack of activity that's steering us in the direction of this problem. What do you think?
Well, I think, Jeff, as usual, and by the way, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here, as it always is, with my dear friend Jeff Burke. I think, as always, you have been prescient in your picking of a topic, because I am staring at this morning's Wall Street Journal with a huge headline in the health and wellness section on a pre-diabetes awareness campaign and some of the controversies that are going on around this campaign. I think you couldn't have picked a better day to talk about this whole thing. The figures are, as you mentioned, very daunting. One out of three people has this condition that they call prediabetes, which you and I also know as metabolic syndrome. Mm-hmm. And what the authorities seem to be saying here is, hey, everybody, relax. We're getting everybody too worked up and excited about this. Not everybody who has prediabetes is going to get diabetes. It's not, they're sort of talking about these tests as if they're the PSA test, which is, as you know, the prostate test that they're now telling men not to get, because if you, most people aren't going to get prostate cancer, and you wind up, all worried about something and getting unnecessary tests, and that's kind of what they're telling people about this prediabetes. So I couldn't be happier to be on your show to push back against the pushback, because I have a very different perspective on this, and all of the authorities that are saying, just relax, it's not that bad, you don't have to get worried, I think are doing people a very big disservice.
Well, there was a time, and I remember this, I remember growing up and going to family reunions, and you'd have this huge conglomeration of people with extended families, and underneath the big oak tree, there'd be two picnic tables, and that's where the older generation would be, mm-hmm. and that's where all the unhealthy people would be. You'd see mm-hmm. the bursitis and the rheumatism and the arthritis mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. the sugar problems, mm-hmm. the heart problems. And at one point in time, everybody was thinking to themselves, oh, I have so long before I have to think about any of those things.
Yeah, not so.
Not longer the issue any
no
longer.
More. No more. You know, Jeff, you remember, you're old enough to remember, I think when we used to call adult onset diabetes. Mm-hmm. We used to call type 2 diabetes adult onset because juvenile diabetes was type 1 diabetes. You're kind of born with that. It's an autoimmune disease. But this other kind of diabetes, you didn't get till you were much older. They don't even use, they haven't used the term adult onset diabetes in a decade because we're seeing it in 13-year-olds now.
Can we talk a little bit about blood sugar? Blood sugar, you know, it is this amazing stuff in our body that does provide fuel. And we obviously need this continual supply to carry out our daily tasks. But somewhere along the line, we've developed an imbalance. And maybe if we could talk a little bit about that and also the term that is being used a lot now, insulin resistance.
Sure. Well, here's the thing. So the blood sugar measurement and its cousin, the A1C measurement, which I'll talk about in just a second, they're both measures of blood sugar, but at different time periods, are the ones that are at the core of this whole argument about prediabetes and are we worrying too much about it and how many people have it. So the blood sugar measurement is really at the core of that. So it's good that you brought that up. It's very, very important. Here's what people need to know. And I would even go so far as this is kind of a blanket statement about a lot of conditions, from high blood pressure to gluten intolerance and celiac, and certainly is true in the blood sugar world. And here's what it is. We pick arbitrarily a number at which we diagnose a condition. Blood pressure, if it's over 120, over 80, it's considered, you know, stage 1 hypertension. And there are all these cutoff points. Same with celiac disease. At a certain point of gluten insensitivity gets so bad, we call it celiac. And at a certain point of blood sugar gets too high, we call it prediabetes. But here's what you got to remember. This stuff exists on a continuum. The fact that you don't quite have the number that qualifies to get a diagnosis doesn't mean you're fine. You know, they say 140 over 90 is officially high blood pressure. So what's about the guy who's 139 over 89? You think he's fine? No. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think this whole prediabetes campaign and the pushback against it is missing the boat. They're saying, hey, you don't really have to worry. If you don't have that number, you're probably, you know, there's a good odds that you won't get the disease. But what about the metabolic damage that's being done right underneath, you know, the cutoff point for that disease? People should not be walking around with high blood sugar, even if it doesn't quite meet the criteria of either prediabetes or diabetes. They should not be walking around with triglycerides in the 140 range, even though it doesn't quite meet the criteria for high triglycerides, which I believe is set way too high. So, you know, we can't get this complacent sense that we have nothing to worry about because we haven't been diagnosed yet. These are warning signs. Blood sugar is a very big, as they say, tell. It tells you a great deal about your health. And we are finding out in study after study after study after study that high sugar diets, even if you don't have diabetes yet, even if you don't have prediabetes yet, are linked with Alzheimer's disease, are linked with cancer, are linked with cardiovascular problems. So I really want to urge people not to buy into this notion that, hey, my numbers, you know, they look at A1C, and if it's not, you know, 6.5, I'm fine, I'm not diabetic. No, not so fast. You got to look at these numbers and their direction as important indicators of metabolic health. And just because you are not diagnosed yet with a condition of high blood sugar known as diabetes, don't mean you're out of the woods.
Today we have a mentality. We are living in a culture where symptom relief in our minds many times means fixing the problem, although we really know that it means covering up the problem and not being annoyed by the symptoms.
Diabetics
are a completely different group of people, and I have a lot of them in my family, mm-hmm. and many of them are in the medical community, and I swear I have never seen such stubbornness. Mm-hmm. But the mentality is if you're pharmaceutically controlled, mm-hmm. you get to do whatever you want to do.
Well, has been the problem all along, Jeff, in our entire health system. We fought this battle for 2 years with the cholesterol myth. I mean, people think, hey, I'm taking a statin, my cholesterol is under control, I'm fine. No, you're not. That's just not so. And it's such an uphill battle to get that message out there when you've got the entire weight and power of the pharmaceutical industry and their advertisers and their lobbyists basically telling people, hey, we can fix this. Take this drug, you'll be fine. You won't be.
But we still have the confusion out there. I do a lot of consultations, and when I start talking about protein, complex carbs, simple carbs, sugars, people go deer in the headlights look. And I actually was speaking with someone last week, and she just found out that she's a diabetic. Now, big time diabetic. Her sugar was off the chart, and they had to put her on medication. Now she's going to change her diet, and she's going to exercise and do the supplementation. But as I talked to her for half hour or longer, she said, "I just don't understand why I'm a diabetic." And I said, "Really?" And I said, "We've talked over the years. She does no exercise. She's at least 150 pounds overweight. She eats no real protein. She lives on simple sugars and simple carbs. But because she eats a salad with it every day, she thought she was okay. And the sweet tooth is off the chart." But she said, "Nobody else in my family has diabetes." And I said, "Well, this is spoon fork fed diabetes." And she was still totally bewildered and frustrated.
Well, you know what? I have a lot of sympathy for your, is it your cousin, did you say?
No,
Because
this is one of my, I did a con, I do a lot of consultations, and
okay.
I'd only met her a couple times over the years, but we sat down, and she was just really shocked that she became a diabetic.
Well, here, but I have a lot of sympathy for people like that, and here's why. Look at what the American Diabetes Association tells them. Look at what the god-awful American Dietetic Association tells them. Look at what their doctors are telling them. The diabetic magazines are filled with recipes for chocolate cake. Hey, you're diabetic, but you can eat this. All the messaging is wrong. Of course they're confused. Of course they don't know why they have diabetes because their doctors are telling them, hey, you can eat this stuff. And diabetic, it's not about the sugar. It's not about the cereal. It's not about the pasta. It's not about the potatoes. No. Those are all fine, healthy foods. They're not. And of course, these people are confused because people are telling them the wrong stuff.
You know, and the thing is, sometimes we want to hear what we want to hear too.
No, not sometimes, Jeff.
All
Always.
the
Didn't mean to interrupt you, but let's correct that one. We all do. And look, it's a human thing. We want to hear what we want to hear. And it's called, in psychology, they call it confirmation bias. It's a tendency to look at the evidence that supports what you already believe and ignore the evidence that goes against it. But look, we got to have a wake-up call here. I mean, we're having a wake-up call in a lot of areas in this country. We need a wake-up call in our food. And the food that we have been taught is healthy and nutritious isn't. And it's causing our blood sugar, and therefore you mentioned insulin sensitivity, I'm sure we're going to get into that, to all go nuts. And you know, Harper, it's interesting, The Atlantic had a magazine, which is a wonderful, you know, thoughtful magazine on all kinds of areas of culture, has a cover story this month called How American Politics Went Insane. Well, guess what? Our food advice has gone insane as well. And we really need a course correction here to correct some of these notions that, you know, granola, high sugar granola and high fructose corn syrup, cocoa chips and whole grain Cheerios, that these are healthy foods. They're not. But you can't blame this poor person you consulted with because these people have been told this stuff for decades. They're just doing what we told them to do.
You know, one of the things that I find to be the most perplexing is that even though we may know we're doing wrong and our vices are out of control, until something has a title or a label, and I know you alluded to this earlier, and a diagnostic, piece of paper that says what's wrong, we either don't accept it or we don't believe it or we don't think it can happen.
You got it.
You know, we're talking today about diabetes, and if you'd like to see what's coming up on the show, like our Facebook page, or follow us on Instagram and Twitter, and let us know what your favorite health habit is. Then listen in. You might hear it mentioned right here on the show. And remember, it's a confusing world out there. Walking into most health food stores today can boggle the brain. Faced with shelf after shelf of supplements, how do you know what to choose? Better Nutrition can help. Better Nutrition is the healing shopping magazine packed with useful information on a variety of health topics, as well as deliciously healthy recipes and good-for-you lifestyle tips. Every issue will help you stay up to date on the best products and advice for optimal wellness. Pick up your copy of Better Nutrition at fine health food stores near you today. And I know, Johnny, you are such an advocate of education. And I have to tell you, your new book, Smart Fat, Eat More Fat, Lose More Weight, Get Healthy Now, classic. Classic.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's very kind of you. I want to make sure that because your podcasts are always so wonderful, because not only do you agitate the problem and tell people what is, beneath the surface, but you also give them solutions. And I think it's important that people understand that this is not some runaway train that they have no say over, mm-hmm. that they have some sense of agency, that there are actually things that they can do right now, even if they haven't gotten a diagnosis, to protect themselves against some of the awful metabolic damage that comes with these conditions. But make no mistake, they're happening in your body even if they haven't quite reached the level of a diagnosis. We should not be complacent and think, my blood sugar is under 6.5 A1C. I don't have diabetes. Nothing to worry about.
I get very, very confused sometimes with the frustration that people have, but the lack of the willingness to make a change, even though I relate to it 100%. I understand how we are. We get to be creatures of habit, and our life these days spinning out of control, like we have one foot nailed to the floor, and we're going around in circles knowing that we have to make a change. And you know, on many of my shows over the years, I've said that most of us in the morning, no matter where we come from, our demographics, our race, our religion, our financial status, when we're naked in the morning in front of the mirror in the bathroom and we're looking at ourselves, we're either saying, oh my goodness, I'm doing really well, or oy vey, how did I get here? We always right then have that motivation. I need to do something. I need to get motivated. But somehow between the drying off from the shower, the getting into the clothes, the driving to work, and pulling into a fast food restaurant or grabbing the vending machine or stopping for your favorite coffee, we get lost in the mix. We don't lose our demand to want change. We just lose our journey to get there.
Yes, well put. Very well put.
You know, it doesn't have to be that difficult. And I think that, you know, when I was talking with this young lady the other day and she was surprised that she was diabetic, we have to remember that, you know, we know if we're heading down this path. I mean, we know what we're eating, we know what we're craving, and we know that those things have to change. What is the best tip you can give somebody for, you know, taking step one in the right direction?
It's always challenging and difficult to come up with the top thing that you can do that will have the most benefit. So let me try to approach it a little bit obliquely. The goal will be to cut out non-foods from your body, from your diet. And by non-foods, I mean processed food products of any kind. The more you can cut those out, the more, without even knowing the sugar content, without even knowing the carb or the protein or the fat, a lot of people's eyes glaze over when you talk about, how much protein's in this? Well, how many calories? Well, what percentage of your diet is fat and protein and carbs? A lot of math, a lot of eyes glazing over. So there's some simple tips that we can give people that I think make sense on an intuitive basis, don't require a lot of math, don't require a lot of nutrition knowledge, and it's very simple. It starts with shop for color. The more color is in your grocery basket, the better you are at getting close to the ideal diet. That means purples and greens and yellows and oranges, orange peppers, red peppers, green vegetables, leafy green vegetables, crunchy green vegetables, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, broccoli. All of these foods are just loaded with the stuff that's going to fight the things that get you to a state where you are in prediabetes and doing the metabolic damage that goes with that. Good sources of high quality protein, like wild salmon. You should eat a ton of that if you can. You should eat grass-fed beef. You should eat beans, nuts, seeds. These are real whole foods. They don't usually come in packages. They don't come with barcodes. And that's where you're trying to move. We should stop being afraid of fat. Fat is our friend, ladies and gentlemen. That is our best friend when it comes to weight loss, our best friend when it comes to cardiovascular health. I understand that that goes against everything you've been taught. That, however, is the truth. But adding fat to your already bad diet is not the answer. And unfortunately, that's what a lot of people hear when we start to talk about how good fat is. What we're talking about is how good a diet high in fat and low in carbohydrates. And people often miss that other part of it. It's not just about taking, as Robert Crayon used to say, my great nutrition mentor and the mentor of so many of the people who have on your show. He used to say, you know, the way Americans hear this information is they go, oh, olive oil is great. I guess I'll put some on my cornflakes. No, that's not the message. The message is we need to shift the mix in our diet from these processed carbohydrates that everyone has told us are healthy, which are not, cereals, breads, pasta, rice, potatoes, starches, all of this stuff which constitute about 60 or 70% of our calories needs to be dialed down to much more like maybe 10% of our calories, whereas the percentage coming from things like Malaysian palm oil, coconut oil, grass-fed beef, olive oil, macadamia nut oil, avocado oil, avocados, nuts, all of these high-fat foods actually help balance our hormones, make weight loss easier, and do not do the metabolic damage that high-carb foods do.
Let's talk about some of the risky business risk factors that are out there. Two of the ones that we talk about, probably more than none, but there can also be a confusion with these, is weight, but also fat distribution, where the fat is.
Well, yes, that's very true. As you probably heard of the expression apple belly and pear-shaped and apple-shaped, those things actually have a profound effect on the kind of metabolic damage that's being done. Believe it or not, the kind of fat that annoys everybody to death, you know, the hips and butts and thighs fat, the kind that, you know, trainers are constantly dealing with their clients, you know, my butt's too fat, my hips and all this, that's actually not dangerous fat. It's annoying fat, doesn't look very good, we don't like it, but it's not very dangerous. The fat that's dangerous is the stuff that's stored around the belly. The apple-shaped body is the one that is a signal that there's metabolic damage being going on here. And there are many reasons for that. We probably don't have to get into all of them, but the fat that's stored around the middle is the most metabolically active fat. It's sending out inflammatory cytokines. It's sending out hormones that keep you fat and make it more difficult to lose weight. So that's exactly what you don't want. And that's actually a very good low-tech test for the thing you mentioned earlier in the podcast, which was insulin resistance. You know, people say to me, I hear all this stuff about insulin resistance and how important it is and how it's a marker for diabetes and prediabetes and obesity and heart disease and Alzheimer's. How do I know that I'm insulin resistant? Here's your test. You can do it without your doctor. You ready for it? It's really good. Stand in front of a wall. Walk towards the wall. Step three, if your belly hits the wall before your nose, you're probably have insulin resistance.
Oh my goodness. I shouldn't be drinking liquid when I'm talking to you sometimes. You know what though? That just made more sense than anything I've heard in a very, very long time. And you know, we know this, and we know when these things are happening and coming our way. And you know, it's not like it's kind of like when somebody goes to the doctor and they're getting a physical and the doctor says, you're very, very overweight. And you're thinking to yourself, really? You know, I felt overweight, but I wasn't really sure until you told me. Obviously, we know every day, you know, when we're squeezing in our clothes and trying to find something that fits. But it is a factor. And of course, having that midsection fat distribution, you know, we need to make sure that that is, you know, something that we're looking at as well. How does activity, or maybe adversely, inactivity, play us into the diabetes situation?
Well, how much time do we have? Because I can give you a good 3-minute summary of how this all works together, and you will remember it forever.
Let's do that. That sounds good.
Okay. So basically, insulin is a hormone that's released from the pancreas. And it's released when sugar in the bloodstream gets a little higher than normal. And that's exactly what you want. Sugar in the bloodstream, very dangerous when it's high. Yet you need sugar in the bloodstream for the energy that the cells need to power activity like workouts, for example, or dancing the Macarena, or anything else that you might need will require some glucose or some energy source for the cells, and that's why your blood sugar goes up when you eat. But that's also why insulin comes along and says, let's not get the sugar too high. Let's get it out of the bloodstream where it can do some damage. Get it into the muscle cells where they actually can use it. That's how insulin's supposed to work. Now, here's what happens when you get sedentary and you get older. You start to eat more sugar. You start to get less active. Now what happens when your blood sugar goes up? And it's going up a little higher because you're eating more and more processed crap. So your sugar's up, your insulin's up, the insulin's knocking on the doors to the muscle cells saying, hey, got all this sugar for you, ready to take delivery. And you're going, wait a minute, my stock room is full. I don't need any more, go somewhere else. And that is what's known as insulin resistance. The muscle cells are basically saying, this dude is going to sit on the couch all day and work a clicker. When he's at work, he's going to work the computer. What do the muscle cells possibly need with all the sugar? We don't want it. Now you've got a problem. Now you've got sugar in your bloodstream very, very high with nowhere to go, and insulin's not getting its job done because the muscle cells are closing their doors. This is a condition called insulin resistance. Makes very good sense, right? The cells are being resistant to the knocks on the door from insulin and sugar. And insulin resistance is now absolutely firmly established as a base cause of diabetes, obesity. It is implicated in heart disease, and they are now calling Alzheimer's type 3 diabetes because of the connection to insulin resistance. So, very, very important to make your cells more insulin sensitive. Now, exercise has an insulin sensitizing effect because now the muscles are actually saying, wait a minute, we do need some sugar. This guy's starting to do a bench press. Oh, he's going for a walk. Okay, wake up. We do need some sugar. So it actually helps to make the cells more sensitive to insulin. Now you don't need quite as much insulin to get the job done because the muscles have now opened their doors and are taking delivery again. So exercise has a very profound effect on lowering both blood sugar and insulin. That's the connection.
We learn a lot every single day about our health situations, our health arena in general. The whole big picture of our health needs to be focused on. Although we do focus on individual things like blood pressure, cholesterol, and diabetes, as Johnny just said, you know, these things are linked together. So we do need to look at the big picture. We need to look at our weight, the food we're consuming, the supplements we're using, our activity, how we're sleeping at night, the beverages we choose, how we eat our food. Do we chew our food well? Do we digest our food well? There's a lot of different tools in our arsenal, and we just need to be aware as much as we possibly can because we need to be on top of our health. It's a very confusing world out there. So make sure that you keep in touch with people that have the information, really good information. A great website of the week, diabetessisters.org, diabetessisters.org. And of course, the books we mentioned already, Smart Fat, Eat More Fat, Lose More Weight, Get Healthy Now by Stephen Mosley and Johnny Bowden, and also Living Low Carb. This is in a fourth edition, so make sure that you check that one out as well. Remember to go to my radio show page at Radio MD, Talk Healthy Today, for the on-demand podcast of all the shows. Be well.